It's 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. A federal court ruled this afternoon that congressional maps in Texas are still flawed by racial gerrymandering and must be partially redrawn before the 2018 elections. Today's decision ordered changes to two of the state's 36 congressional districts. One is held by Democrat Lloyd Doggett of Austin, the other by Republican Blake Fahrenthold of Corpus Christi. The ruling was not a complete victory for Democrats and minority rights groups that wanted more sweeping changes. The same three-judge panel in San Antonio had ruled earlier this year that Texas Republicans intentionally discriminated against minorities while drafting new maps in 2011. The court gave Texas until the end of this week to decide whether to give its legislature the first crack at making the changes or handle the revisions in court. The legislature's special session is scheduled to end Thursday. Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings wants to form a task force to discuss whether the city should remove its Confederate monuments. Rawlings told reporters today he's asked the Dallas Holocaust Museum and other groups about what to do with city statues of Robert E. Lee, Jefferson Davis, and other Confederate leaders.
Look, this is simple. I mean, we could just remove them. The question is, how are we going to start to heal on this issue? And to do that, we've got to be able to listen and talk to one another. And there's a process to do that. So I am a big fan of moving quickly. But when we have a chance to learn from one another, I'll take that moment.
Cities across the country are having similar debates after this weekend's violence in Charlottesville, Virginia. White nationalists carried torches around a Lee statue there. Reverend Gerald Britt with the Dallas nonprofit City Square says time for talk has passed.
This is not new. 20, 25 years now, this has periodically come up. And this is something that needs to happen now. Frankly, we need to have the guts to pull the trigger on action that needs to take place right now.
Five Dallas City Council members signed a memo last week asking for a vote, calling for the city to remove Confederate monuments from city property. Now to the story of brothers Miguel and Jose Trevino. They were born in Mexico. Jose immigrated to Texas and made a career as a bricklayer, while Miguel ascended to the top ranks of the Zeta cartel. Later in life, Jose became an elite horse trader with a little help from his brother. Today on Think, Chris Boyd talked with journalist Joe Tone about how the Zetas laundered money through horse racing.
The Zetas started to build this horse racing business and enjoyed winning, and it also provided a way for Miguel Trevino Morales to slide some money to his American family if they could win some races and eventually turn those winning racehorses into horses that could breed, and they could make money off of those breedings. If they buy a horse with drug money and then it wins a race, the money they get back comes from the racetrack, or the money that they get back selling a horse or breeding a horse is theoretically clean. Every layer between it being drug money in Mexico and being cut as a check or sent as a wire from a legitimate financial institution in the United States or from a racetrack or from an auction house gives some distance from that original transaction and is harder for the feds to say, hey, that's drug money.
Joe Tone is the author of Bones, Brothers, Horses, Cartels, and the Borderland Dream. He speaks tonight at 7 at Interabang Books. This episode of Think re-airs tonight at 10, and you can subscribe to the podcast at think.kera.org. On Tuesdays, our One Crisis Away project examines life on the financial edge. Today, renters on the financial edge. Poor families that spend too much on rent or live in terrible conditions have what's known as worst-case housing needs. A new U.S. Housing and Urban Development report shows the number of those types of renters surging across the country. KERA's Courtney Collins sat down with Sandy Rollins of the Texas Tenants Union.
Sandy Rollins, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for the invitation.
Who are the people with worst-case housing needs? What do their lives look like?
So in order to be considered having a worst-case housing need, you have to spend more than half of your income on housing, live in severely substandard housing, or both. This morning I had an email from a tenant who is a veteran. His income is $1,000 a month. His rent is $790 a month, plus he pays $90 on utilities. Too many people are struggling with high rents and substandard conditions. And we're talking about retirees and we're talking about low-wage families.
The vast majority of these worst-case renters are spending too much of the money they earn on rent. Why is that such a risky practice?
Well, it puts people on the edge of homelessness. one thing can go wrong and they aren't going to be able to pay their rent, and nonpayment of rent is grounds for eviction. The other problem is when people fall behind, sometimes they'll try to catch up, but they are hit with late fees. And late fees are not very well regulated in this state, neither are rents. Late fees in Texas are supposed to be reasonable, but we often see people that are paying $75 for the first day and then $10 or $15 for each day thereafter, and it becomes a downward spiral.
This HUD report looked at housing for the entire country. What did the numbers show?
They showed 7.72 million people with worst-case housing needs in 2013 and 8.3 million in 2015. The numbers show a 41% increase since 2007 and a 66% increase since 2001. So in every category, there's more people facing worst-case housing needs.
This is a national report, and it analyzed the Dallas-Fort Worth-Arlington metro area, too. What did the research show about North Texas?
It's not good. They went through the 15 largest metropolitan areas. Of the households with less than 50% of the area median income in the Dallas-Fort Worth-Arlington area, 48.5% have worst-case housing needs. I think there are six cities that maybe have worse statistics than the Dallas-Fort Worth-Arlington area.
Given your work at the Texas Tenants Union, are you surprised that things in North Texas are desperate for so many people?
I'm not. Our office has always been busy. There's never been a shortage of problems to work on because the private market has never met the needs of the lowest income households. But it is definitely getting worse. We used to have people contact us and say, can my landlord go up on the rent $25 at a time? But now people are facing $100 and $200 and $300 rent increases, and their wages aren't going up that much, and certainly the people on fixed incomes aren't seeing that kind of increase in their checks.
More than 8 million people across the U.S. are spending at least half their income on rent. That kind of seems insurmountable. What's the solution?
There should be more equitable housing policies in this country. We need to increase the amount that's being spent on low-income rental programs at the federal level and certainly at the local level as well. Low-income housing assistance is not an entitlement program. Just because you are eligible for it doesn't mean that you get it. You can maybe apply once every few years and see if you can get your name on a waiting list. But on the flip side, wealthy homeowners get subsidized through something called the mortgage interest deduction. And that is an entitlement program. If they're eligible for it, they get it. All they have to do is fill out their income taxes each year and deduct the mortgage interest, which is a huge part of a mortgage payment. Doing some reform there, because the mortgage interest deduction can be used not just on the first house, it can be used on the second house, a vacation home, it can be used for a yacht. And if some of that money were redirected towards low-cost rental assistance, we would have less of a problem in this country.
Sandy Rollins, Executive Director at the Texas Tenants Union, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow morning, Texas has joined a coalition of states to investigate the role pharmaceutical companies played in creating and prolonging the opioid epidemic. But doctors are looking into the role they play regarding the opioid problem, and some are changing the way they prescribe medications. That's tomorrow morning at 8:22 during Morning Edition. This evening brings us mostly cloudy skies, a chance of rain later on, with a low around 80. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.